powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Jake, you know me. I'm not one to brag about being right. I think it's tacky. It's beneath me. It's just not what I do. It's not who I am. Curtis, you can confirm.
Uh-huh.
Whenever you're ready to confirm. Whenever you feel like it.
I'm not ready.
Okay. Let me know when you're ready.
I don't think I'm ever going to know.
It's looking more and more like Geno Smith is going to be the week one starter for the Seattle Seahawks, is it not?
At the current moment?
Uh-huh.
I mean...
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think it is.
I don't think it's anything that you could put in pen.
Geno Smith taking the first team reps with the Seahawks at Mariners minicamp. This is what happens when you do an hour of Mariners right into Seahawks at mandatory minicamp. Now, we'll see what happens today. You've got your final day of minicamp today. Maybe Drew Lock takes over some of those snaps. For right now, though,
probably
Geno
won't.
Smith. That's the thing. For right now, it's just Geno.
I'll tell you why this isn't a big deal.
Why?
Because at the current moment, there is an obvious decision by this organization to make this not about competition, that this is about learning, developing, that this is about growing, and that they're slowing everything down. So the way I view it, is that Geno Smith is getting the majority of the one reps right now because he knows the most about the offense. Because from an operational standpoint, they're saying, look, we're just going to give Geno these reps. We're going to give him this opportunity to run the show. And Drew Lock, we are not going to put pressure on you at this point in time. And we are just going to ease you into this process. I don't know why you would not rotate him more with the ones. That doesn't make much sense to me. And I will give you that. But I do not believe that they have already basically pegged the starter at this point in time.
And maybe they haven't. But let me...
They haven't.
Let's see what the two guys fighting for the starter job have to say. It's the first time we heard from both of them. First, Geno Smith talked about why he thinks he's well-suited for this offense.
I think the up-tempo style, similar to what I played in college. Also, just my ability and Shane's trust in me to get in and out of plays, to see coverages, understanding our offense and, you know, moving guys around, being able to create mismatches. I think Shane believes in my ability and my knowledge as a quarterback, and I think that's something that suits us well.
So saying, like, look, Shane believes in me. I get this offense. I feel like my skill set makes me best suited for this offense. They don't have pads on right now. Obviously, it's just mini camp. This is the earliest part of OTAs, or one of the earlier parts of OTAs. But believes, like, yeah, this is an offense I understand. Meanwhile, you have Drew Lock, who's in a new environment, being asked about quarterback battles. This is what he had to say.
Yeah, that was really my first time ever having that happen last year. You know, I tried to, you know, compare the whole time. All right, did Teddy beat me that day or did I win that day? And overall, if you start thinking like that, it's just not good for your mental. It's not good for your process of becoming a better quarterback. It's not about who won that day. It's about, you know, did I get better today to make the guys around me better? Because if I'm playing at my best, the other 10 dudes around me are going to be playing really good football too. So just not comparing. Comparison is the thief of joy is what Barry Odom told me one day when I was in college, and that's kind of stuck with me to this point.
So I'll say this. He at least has what sounds like the right mentality for taking those second team reps.
He does. And I think that is what the organization wants him to focus on, Stacy, is don't worry about where you're getting the reps right now. We just want you to get comfortable with the offense. And if you can do that each and every single day, what did I tell you, you know, from the jump in this OTA process? The person that can show the most and has the most to gain in OTAs is Drew Lock. Now, has he done that? Has he made, you know, those gains and everyone in the organization, you know, buzzing about Drew Lock, how quickly he's gotten this offense down, how great he looks, and he's poised to take over the starting job? Well, clearly, no. That hasn't happened yet. But that doesn't mean that Drew Lock is out of the running or is not going to be the starter week one. Mm-hmm. I do believe that they are really trying to help him take this one day at a time and just get yourself ready for training camp. Just put yourself in a position to really, truly compete with Geno come training camp. That's how I see it. But as Geno said, the fact that there's so much comfort with Shane Waldron, his offense, and that they have comfort with him and they trust the knowledge that he possesses, that is going to be a major leg up in this competition. And that's why Drew Lock is going to have to get to that point to make it even. If not, then Stacey, you get to boast all you want.
I can't wait. Now, Drew Lock isn't going to be
being the week one starter.
Drew Lock isn't going to be open if he still has questions about the offense. For at least what he told reporters, he sounds like he's very comfortable.
Very comfortable. I feel like the way that Shane and Dave started teaching me from the day I got here up until now. At first, you feel a little overwhelmed and there's a lot that's thrown on your plate. But over time, you learn something new about each play every day you're out here in practice, and it all starts tying together. And I feel really, really, really good about this offense. I feel like I could go out and play a game tomorrow and succeed. And that's a testament to the coaches in there and the guys around me.
Now, I'm going to go ahead and guess early that while Pete and John do genuinely really like Drew Lock, they probably do have a little more comfort in Geno Smith understanding the offense right now, despite what Drew's saying.
Yes.
That's my assumption.
100%. Yes. I think that that is a very accurate portrayal of what's going on right now. And I think that the Seahawks would have to limit their playbook if Drew Lock is the starter today. If we're talking about today, they would have to limit their playbook and pare it down for Drew Lock. Now, I think that's pretty reasonable considering that this is his first offseason within this offense, being a young guy. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean he can't get there at training camp. So I believe that that Drew Lock has a lot of work cut out for him to be able to get to that point, and he's got to show the maturity of really dialing it in and really buckling down to have that ownership of the offense and being able to put it on display on the field. And if not, you're having Geno Smith as your week one starter. He will be your week one starter if Drew Lock cannot get that done. They are not going to force the issue with Drew Lock, not in the least.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little surprised that the reps aren't more evenly split, because do you remember when we heard from Brian Schottenheimer? This wasn't at minicamp, it was at OTAs. And he said, we're going to decide who gets really work in with the first team when we get a little closer to training camp. Like, he was like, we're going to sit down, we're going to have a discussion, and that's what will be decided then. And it sounded like anticipated them splitting a bit more. So it does make me wonder if we will see either a bit more of a split come training camp.
You will.
Yeah.
You will. Yes. Yeah.
I guess I'd be surprised if this early in the season they were quick to set in with Geno as their guy.
During this time when you're trying to implement everything, it's really easy to get comfortable with the guy who knows it all, right? I mean, Geno's been here for 4 years. He's been with Shane in this offense. This is his second year with this offense. He knows it.
So
he knows it better than anybody on the team. So you're going to have comfort with him just from that inherently. That's just how coaches work. And if Geno can capture that and he can match it with performance in training camp and in preseason, he may very well run away with the job.
Yeah.
We'll wait and see. But they are not guaranteeing anything to Geno or to Drew Lock, and it will be a very much an open competition come training camp time.
I have a question. Obviously, the NFL takes almost the entirety of July off. They get back at the end of July usually.
Yes.
For training camp. It's usually around the 30th or 31st or whatever. At that point, I mean, everyone already has the playbook, and then you all kind of get that month off. Is what you're saying that it could be that it's to the benefit of everyone if someone more familiar with the offense is running with it right now, because they're all going to get this month off to really study the offense, and this is the only work you get in before then?
Yeah. I think so, and I also believe that, I'm not going to say that I don't think it's unusual. I do. If it's a true open quarterback competition, it's unusual that Drew Lock is not getting one reps. It's unusual. That doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. Like, even for me as a third-string quarterback that was on the team in 2016 and 17, I got a couple first team reps at the start of training
camp.
Did
you ever connect with someone for a touchdown?
Yeah. I mean, I connected with Doug and Jermaine and those guys, Tyler. But, you know, like my point being is that everybody gets those reps just inherently in the way they work it. Now you add a heated quarterback competition. He's going to get those reps.
Yeah.
Like, they're not just going to hand this thing over to Geno. But I do believe that for Drew, what they want him focusing on is not, hey, playing the mind games, right? So, Stacey, that cut from Drew Locke, right? Of him talking about comparing himself. Can we play that again? Cut number 13. Listen to him talk about the comparisons, and then I'm going to tell you what the Seahawks staff could be doing here, which would make sense as to why they're not going in and out of the ones and twos.
Yeah, that was really my first time ever having that happen last year. You know, I tried to, you know, compare the whole time. All right, did Teddy beat me that day, or did I win that day? And overall, if you start thinking like that, it's just not good for your mental. It's not good for your process of becoming a better quarterback. It's not about who won that day. It's about, you know, did I get better today to make the guys around me better? Because if I'm playing at my best, the other 10 dudes around me are going to be playing really good football too. So just not comparing. Comparison is the thief of joy is what Barry Odom told me one day when I was in college, and that's kind of stuck with me.
So if that is truly if that's the mentality that he's taken on and he learned and grew from that moment, all right, well, the Seahawks staff could sit here and say, well, we're going to help you out with that even more. Don't even worry about ones and twos and playing the mental game. Am I with the ones today? Is Geno with the ones today? What does it mean if he gets one, you know, two more days of one reps than me, right? Mm-hmm. And getting caught up in that trap. We're going to rotate receivers in because they do. I guarantee you Drew Lock's thrown to Tyler. He's thrown to all of the receivers because that's how they typically work in the rotations. It doesn't matter who you're going with. Just learn the offense. Execute the offense. Focus on that on a day-to-day basis. And then when it comes training camp time, then it's ready to roll. But the organization doing everything that they can to just calm everything down. This is about the learning and the growing process. And that's what Pete Carroll said from day one. We're not doing 11-on-11 anymore. We're not doing those types of drills because we want to keep guys healthy and we want to focus on the teaching and the learning. And that's not just for a new defense. That's also for a new quarterback in Drew Locke that they're trying to insert into this competition. And Geno Smith already knows the operation.
All right. Again, final day of Seahawks mandatory minicamp today. Coming up at around 1:15, we'll be hearing from members of the team. There's no set schedule as to who those names will be, though most people anticipating it'll be Pete Carroll we'll be hearing from at 1:15, given it's the final day of minicamp. So hopefully we get some updates, not just on Geno and Drew and how those reps are split up, but how about Chris Carson, right? We haven't heard from Pete Carroll since he last said that they'd be getting an update that week about Chris Carson. That was obviously a couple weeks ago because he hasn't spoken with reporters since then. Obviously, a couple guys have been sitting out. Dee Eskridge missed the other day. So lots of health updates, I'm sure, will be asked of Carroll, as will some questions about the quarterback battle, which, of course, will be ongoing. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First Down, ESPN's Bill Barnwell says the AFC West this year could be the toughest division ever in NFL history. Better than the 2013 NFC West, though, Jake?
Look, to come out and make that bold proclamation before the season begins, I don't know if I can get on board with that because it's very much a TBD situation. The 2013 NFC West was loaded that year. You had the Seahawks and the 49ers that, in my opinion, were clearly the two best teams in the NFL. Then you could put the Denver Broncos as the third best team with that offense. But those were the Seahawks, 49ers were two complete teams that were physical, that could beat you up. They were built very, very similarly to each other. Though they were amazing that year. Then people forget about how good the Arizona Cardinals were. They also were a 10-win team that year as well. They had double digits. And then the Rams finished the year at 7-9. And they were a good group with a good front seven. And so I think the 2013 NFC West as of right now, clear head and shoulders above everyone else, was the best division in NFL history. But if the reason why Bill Barnwell is looking at the AFC West and saying that that there's a good chance that this could be the case is from a quarterback perspective. Stacey, what do we know the media and everybody else falls in love with? This is
conspiracy theories?
No, this is a quarterback-driven league.
Yes.
And you fall in love with quarterbacks. Yes. You fall in love with quarterback play. Could this go down as the best quarterback division in NFL history? Yeah, it could.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes, already on track to be a future Hall of Famer. Russell Wilson right there.
Well, how about the type of passing? This isn't a Sean McVay, Jared Goff, Rams. This is deep bombs down the field.
This is deep bombs down the field, big arms, great talent. Justin Herbert has a chance to really be a special one as well. And then, of course, your boy, Derek Carr. Top 10
our
quarterback,
boy,
right?
Curtis. Yeah. That's
this
right.
Show's boy.
This show's
no,
boy.
No, not this show's boy. But you look at Derek Carr. I mean, these are four really, really good quarterbacks and have a chance to compete against each other. I think it's going to be a great division, but I think it's way too early to say that this is going to be the best division in NFL history, because that 2013 year NFC West, that was pretty darn good.
Curtis and I were actually thinking of reaching out to Derek Carr to be a coach at our quarterback camp.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So
good. I hope
the
you
offer
call
still stands, Derek, if you're listening. I'm assuming he is.
I hope you call and he crushes your dreams by not answering.
I don't think that
would
happen.
That's not the kind of guy
It's not the kind of quarterback.
That's the kind of guy
right.
You think he is, but he would surprise you.
I don't think so. I think we know him.
Yeah.
I think we got a good grasp.
Yeah. Him and Stacey work on their eye makeup together.
Yeah.
Because it looks like he wears eyeliner.
He taught me everything I know about eyeliner. Yep, that's true. Smoky eye look.
He helped you get ready for that Slipknot look.
Yes. What makes Cooper Kupp deserving of his new contract?
What makes Cooper Kupp deserving of his new contract is because he does it all. I mean, this is a receiver who not only can stretch down the field and catch balls down the field and be a threat downfield, he works the middle intermediate area of the field, does the dirty work, and is willing to take on physical contact. And then you add the fact that he is tremendous with yards after catch. He's one of the best receivers in the league in yards after catch. Gets plenty of rushing opportunities, and I hadn't even mentioned the fact that he blocks like a tight end. Like, they legitimately use him at the end of the line of scrimmage, and he blocks like a tight end. He is a physical, willing blocker, and a very good one at that. And this is a receiver that has really kind of changed the game, because it changes your mindset as to what a receiver is capable of doing, right? You look at Randy Moss and Jerry Rice and those types of players, the greatest of all time, and what are they known for? Their receiving ability. Go figure. Well, Cooper Kupp runs, or he runs routes, he catches, he rushes, he blocks. I mean, he is all of it in one, and that's why you feel great if you're the Rams giving him the type of contract that he has been given, Stacey, because he really, truly does it all, and he's an unselfish player, and he's a team guy. And so everyone looks at him and thinks, yeah, well-deserved. No one's going to complain about it. And Stacey, now that makes three Rams players that are getting paid over $30 million. Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp, Aaron Donald, the only team in NFL history to have three players on their roster getting paid over $30 million per year.
Can I ask a second down follow-up? Take Cooper Kupp out of it. What's one of the better blocking wide receivers you can think of? Like an underrated wide receiver when it came to his willingness to block or ability.
I will give you a guy
it's okay
that
if it's a Seahawk because you've watched them more closely.
Well, I mean, DK Metcalf is a very willing blocker. I really love watching the intensity in which he goes about it. That's usually kind of how he starts fights. Anyways, that's how he kind of gets to be the antagonist is by getting after people in the running game. But somebody else that I thought did a really good job in the running game. Andre Johnson for the Houston Texans. He was somebody that, you know, with his size and his strength, he would you know, really get after it and be a willing blocker as well. That is somebody else that comes to mind.
Pro Football Focus has Alan Lazard of the Packers as their highest graded blocking receiver. He's 6'5", 227. He's a big fella.
Yeah,
he's taller than I thought. Third down. All right, we'll be quick with these next few here. Speaking of Cooper Kupp, how does that contract affect DK Metcalf's negotiations?
Well, this is what happens when you wait this long. I mean, for the positives that the organization could probably argue to you as to why this is the right thing for the organization to do, it compartmentalize and wait for these big superstar contracts to the end of the summer. The one downfall of that, Stacey, is the fact that everybody else gets paid, mm-hmm. and the contract for somebody like DK Metcalf continues to rise, just like with Jamal Adams. There were other safeties that got paid last offseason that continued to raise the asking price. And for DK Metcalf, it is the same. And now Cooper Kupp, look, he's got $26 million per year in his new money that he's getting, the three-year new money that he's getting attached to. Not the 2 years that's still left on his deal that everybody's throwing out the 110 number. No, the new money that he's getting on that three-year extension puts him at $26 million per year. So that raises that price point. Then Cooper Kupp gets $75 million guaranteed. So now the guaranteed money just went up.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happens when you wait. And the one time, there are other times, but the one time you did not wait as an organization and it paid off beautifully, you did it twice with one player. And I don't understand why they haven't tried to continue to keep doing that.
Wilson?
Nope. Can you think of it? He's currently on the roster.
Wait, they did it twice with one player when they didn't wait and then paid him?
Yep, they did it two separate times.
Paid him two separate times and he's
the
on
only
the
player that's still remaining on this team that's been with the team for a while.
Don't tell me.
Come on.
No, this is going to be horrible radio. We don't have enough time. Who is it?
Tyler Lockett.
Oh!
Both
yes,
times.
And they were a bargain.
Both times. First time they paid him $10 million and everybody's like, what? They paid him $10 million? What? And then it was a steal. It was an absolute
that's
steal.
A good point.
Then they go out and they pay him $17 million per year and everybody's like, what? Now he's going to be into his 30s. Are you sure you want to do that? Absolutely, because now Tyler Lockett's contract looks like a steal. Both times they got out ahead of it,
yeah, and
they pay dividends because of that. Now that you wait on DK Metcalf, the asking price continues to go up and up and up, and you still have more contracts potentially to go.
Fourth down. Obviously, this one's a little weird and related to the timeline, a story we're about to jump into, where the Angels took a drastic measure to try and break a 13-game losing streak. Spoiler alert, it did not work. Jake, have you ever done something weird to offset bad luck? Have you ever done something where it was like, all right, I'm going to change it up this week. I'm going to do this instead. Or maybe something a little superstitious to try to end. And it could be not in your life, but for your favorite team. Like maybe... the Mariners were on a losing streak, or maybe, your Jayhawks, Rock Chalk.
Yes, I can think of one specific, I can't remember the game, but I can think of one specific instance where before the ball was snapped, one time I got up and I walked into, my kitchen area and a big play happened. And I thought to myself, let me
try it again?
Trying this. And they ended up winning the game. So, yeah, I mean, before every play, I'd get up, I'd walk it over to, it'd be like this nervous energy, and it drove Brooke crazy, obviously, but I had to keep doing it for the team. As a player, I would change what side of the field I was on, what side of the 50 I was on. So if things were going, if I was on the sideline, right, and the defense is on the field, if things weren't going well, the other opposing offense was marching the ball up and down the field, then I would go to the other side of the 50 that I was currently on just to change the mojo.
All right, well, I'll tell you what the Angels did. It didn't change the mojo, but it is kind of funny. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own Twitter timeline. So let's get it started with the Angels. They're on a 14-game losing streak, but they were on a 13-game losing streak. So the news got worse. Now, they've tried a couple things. Number one, they fired their manager. That obviously didn't work out, though. The second thing they did was try something a little superstitious. Each player used a Nickelback song for his walk-up music. Nickelback song for his walk-up music. Mm-hmm. So, Shohei Ohtani had Photograph.
Look at this photograph. Every time I do, it makes me laugh. Why did our eyes get so red? Who what the hell is on Joey's
I don't control how long this plays. I don't control. The that's all Curtis.
Yeah, that's all anybody knows yeah. in that song.
I don't know which ones Curtis has. So you had Adele Rockstar.
Joe Adele Rockstar.
Joe Adele Rockstar. You had Walsh okay. with How You Remind Me.
Oh.
What a night. You all know the words. You know the words. Don't fight it. You had Duffy with Someday. Ligaris with If Today Was Your Last Day. I have to say some of these songs I don't know, which is shocking. Marsh.
You would if you heard them.
When We Stand Together, maybe. Curtis, do you have another one that's on this list?
Yeah, I think Tyler Wade, who is a utility okay. player, he had Saving Me.
I'm falling. Show me what
oh
it's
my
like.
God, I
hear the last one standing. Teach me wrong from right.
I swear I don't
guys,
listen
no,
to
listen. I have That's no listen, that, listen, listen. Is Nickelback good?
Jordan Eberle of the Kraken would tell us. Yes.
He would tell you for sure they're good.
Why did we all decide to hate Nickelback? Because I gotta be honest, I know the words to every single one of the songs you just played.
Oh man, I don't know. It's kind of a conspiracy.
Are we
to be
wrong?
Honest with you? Is it one of those things that
are we bullying Nickelback?
No, I don't think people are bullying Nickelback.
I think we might be on the wrong side of history when it comes to
there
Nickelback.
There might be a group of people that bullied other people into saying that Nickelback is bad.
I had a Nickelback
like,
CD.
They're like, oh, you like Nickelback? And you're like, well, I mean, no.
I have bullied
no, I
someone on this show for going to a Nickelback concert. Like a guest.
Oh, yeah, Jordan Eberle.
Jordan
yeah.
Eberle.
Yes, you did.
I will say that I did appreciate the fact that the Angels did not use the song Hero from the Spider-Man soundtrack. Because,
thank goodness.
Because here's why. It's not a Nickelback song. It's a Chad Kroeger song,
oh.
which is different.
They didn't fall into that
yeah,
trap.
Yeah, exactly.
They wanted to make sure it would work.
All you common yeah. Nickelback fans out there, not the diehards,
now,
would think that that's a Nickelback song.
Here's the problem. Now, I love the plan. Flawless
Do
execution.
You?
Here's the problem. It didn't work. They were shut out 1-0 by the Red Sox in their 14th straight loss. So I don't blame Nickelback at all for that. I would like to be very clear that I don't blame Nickelback for that.
No, I do not. Also, I think this is the dumbest thing ever. Why are you doing this? First you fire your manager.
No, I think it's
funny. Jake, you lose 13 in a row.
Is it the
you
manager?
Do whatever you can, Jake. You're Guys. How many games? Now you're 14. You're 6 games away from tying a record.
You're a professional sports team.
Yeah, so act like it by having very carefully chosen walk-up songs that void some of the
like
bad
it.
Demons that are in the clubhouse.
This is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. So what do you do now? Oh, well, Nickelback didn't get us through it. Are you just going to go through a new artist every single time?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, another
is that the plan?
That, like,
is that,
don't
is
like?
That
yeah,
what
get the
manager...
Going.
So they
Creed.
Fire Joe Madden. They go
Creed.
To the new manager. They go to the new Creed. Interim manager, and they say, hey, how are you going to provide a spark? What are you going to do to turn things around?
Like a now 27
and
kind
his
of get a mix?
And his idea is we're going to have a Nickelback day. Nickelback is going to get us through. Is that what happened here?
Yeah. That's
yeah,
exactly
yeah,
what happened.
Honestly, and here's the thing, Jake. Here's the
so
thing.
Now do you fire this manager? Do we need to
no,
go to another
no,
manager?
It
no.
turns out it was not the new interim manager, Phil Nevin's idea. It was a quality control coach who he's kind of known
Ironically,
for playing
is he
Nickelback.
Controlling the quality
yeah,
of music?
He is known for playing Nickelback on team bus rides, so they're like, let's give it a shot.
Look.
We've lost 13 in a row.
I need you to
What's 14 in a row?
Listen to me. If they were to do this, if they would have done it this way and beat the Red Sox 13 to nothing, you'd say it worked.
Well,
and you'd say
but
that
it,
why.
But
and
it
then
didn't.
What happens, Stacey,
it didn't.
The next game and the game after that and the game after that, they're playing only Nickelback.
That's what I'm saying.
It becomes a thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Tonight on Extra Innings, I have a Red Sox beat writer who was at the game last night in Anaheim with all the Nickelback songs. We'll talk to her about what was it like to be there.
Love it.
Just rocking out to Nickelback for 4 hours.
The 360 says they should go with Britney for this next round.
509 says, I've seen Nickelback twice in concert, they put on one hell of a show.
That's
just saying.
About six less times than Jordan Eberle has, for the record.
Curtis, do you know the record for a losing streak in MLB history? I feel like this is something you would know.
Isn't it like 26 or something? Like the Phillies did it way back when?
Yeah, in 1961, they have the Phillies with 23. But I've seen 26 also. And then, so you have to think, you're 14 losing streak. You're close to tying for like around seventh place. If you
Mariners had
more,
a
19.
17 game losing streak, I think, in 2011.
Yeah.
So that was, they're down bad that year.
What do you think they're going to go to next? Are they going to change genres? What do you think they should do?
I think
do
you got to keep going with musicians and artists that have a very strong. They generate a lot of strong opinions one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, like Neil Diamond or something.
Yeah, don't go up there with like the Beatles.
No.
I mean, you need someone that has enough songs people know, but who maybe not everyone. You kind of go back and forth.
I think they should just play Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up. Every single time.
And if it
just
works.
Rickroll the crowd in Anaheim
if it
every
works,
single time.
They can't stop doing it.
Yeah.
Like we said before with Nickelback.
Well, are they gonna go through those 90, like, are we gonna get like Sugar Ray or the Goo Goo Dolls?
Well, that's why I said
or
they should do like a now
Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls.
Creed. Like who else is coming up next? Like what do we have?
Well, the problem is that some of the players are also like maybe a little too young to know.
I mean,
all of them.
Maybe, but I mean they all got talked into Nickelback.
Yeah. I don't know. Look,
anything for the team.
Look, whatever works for the Angels. Am I personally rooting for the losing streak to continue? That's not very classy. I would never say that.
Yes, I am.
Oh,
I am absolutely
rooting for it to continue.
Absolutely.
I don't like the Angels
absolutely
at all.
Absolutely am. All right, it's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Getting back to some sound from Jerry DePoto on Cal Raleigh's development, what he loves about Julio, and what he wants to see from Jared Kelnick in Tacoma. That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. It's an off day for the Mariners, which means you can tune into Extra Innings tonight from 7 to 9 p.m., hosted by Curtis Rogers. The M's are back at it tomorrow with a series against the Red Sox, and that's Around the Diamond brought to you by Shane Company. We heard from Mariners GM Jerry DePoto this morning earlier in the show. If you missed it, by the way, it's in the back half of the first hour. So if you're listening to the podcast, that's where you can find the first part of this, the full interview on the Mike Salk Show. We talked about kind of these broader things, right? A meeting that the team had after their series against Oakland, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now I want to get into specific players because, of course, Jerry was asked about some guys. So we are going to start. I already did injury updates on bullpen. I shouldn't say on specific guys because we did do that. But I'm going to start with Cal Raleigh. Here's what Jerry had to say.
You know, in the world of sliding doors, I think the fact that, you know, Tom Murphy was not yet ready to come back from the IL, and Cal very quickly after a week in Tacoma was able to come back. It has a similar feel to what it was like last year for Luis Torrance, where he got a chance to take a break. He exhaled, and since he's been back, he just looks different. There's a gleam in his eye. He looks engaged. I think he's been behind the plate. He's been catching great. You know, the game calling, the interaction with the pitcher is just, he is engaged in a way that I don't think he has been as a major leaguer.
That's something that I didn't mention. We talked a bit about Cal, Jake, to lead off the show, and we talked about him at the plate, but we didn't mention as much about how he's improved behind it as well. And as a catcher, and just the all-around improvement you've seen from him.
I honestly believe that he's been forced to. Tom Murphy's out. He's been the guy that's been one of the key leaders of the team. He's been, you know, the leader of handling the pitching staff. And Cal has kind of taken a back seat. Now that Murphy is not there, it thrusts Cal Raleigh into a position where he needs to be more mature. And he needs to take ownership of that role, and he has done that exceptionally well. He has been more comfortable in his skin, right? I mean, that's basically what Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto are saying, not only with the adjustments that he's made at the plate and shortening his swing and obviously seeing the ball much, much better, but, I mean, I just think the entirety of Cal Raleigh has really changed, and that has been something that's been really cool to see, because that's what makes you think that this could be, or make you believe that this could be something that Cal Raleigh can just become, that he could be this kind of player for the rest of his career, rather than this just be a really cool 2-week window that flashes, you know, Cal Raleigh's potential and you never see it again. Is that if somebody really truly finds themselves and becomes comfortable with their process and how they go about their business, Stacey, at the big league level, that's when you see talent really come together, and that's when you start to see some consistency. And hopefully that's what we're witnessing with Cal Raleigh, because we certainly have seen that with Julio Rodriguez day in and day out.
Speaking of Julio, Jerry DePoto asked about what he's loved from the Mariners AL Rookie of the Month. Here's what he said.
He's just such a different player. You know, the first thing you think of, Julio, and I think we've seen this really, you know, since he got here, but Julio doesn't shy from the moment. In fact, he seems to rise to it. And, you know, that's a wonderful sign with a young player, and probably portends great things to come. He has a way about him at such a young age of standing up and allowing the light to shine on him. And he doesn't shy away from it.
He really doesn't. He seems to have fully embraced this opportunity, always seems to be having fun, but just as importantly, is also performing and backing it up now. It has been so interesting to, and I don't mean to compare players, but to watch Julio ascend in MLB and then watch how for other players there's an up and down. And we've only seen a month and a half or so of Julio's career, so who knows what happens. But it is so interesting how much mentality and just little tiny things play into how well someone can adjust to MLB.
Right. It also is really difficult, right? I mean, the thing is Julio makes it look so easy in regards to, oh, just be yourself. Oh, just be comfortable doing this, doing that. And it takes a special talent to be able to, play at the level that he has played this early in his career. And I think the other aspect of it is, you know, being comfortable with failure and not letting that dictate what your next performance is going to be like. And that is something that Julio has done such an incredible job at doing and handling up to this point. And hopefully that continues, you know, throughout his career. But a lot of young players, we talked about this with Taylor Trammell. We saw it with Jared Kelnick. We've seen it with Cal Raleigh. And now he's, you know, put together a really nice 2 weeks here. But a lot of young players, when they come up to the big league level, are failing at a rate that they've never failed before, right? How's the number one prospect with the Baltimore Orioles doing right now?
He's struggling.
Struggling.
Adley Rutschman, yeah. He was not doing so hot.
Yeah, struggling. Mike Trout struggled. I mean, it is not uncommon, but how do they go through those struggles, and how do they learn through that process? I mean, that to me is what is so incredibly difficult about baseball. And it takes a special kind of player to be able to manage that and get through it very, very quickly.
Now, he wasn't a top prospect, but speaking of high prospects who have struggled, Jared Kelnick obviously being one of those guys, he's down with AAA Tacoma for TBD period of time. Jerry DePoto asked about what the Mariners want to see from him.
Lots of good. He is hitting the ball hard. He's hitting the ball frequently. It is, you know, the stat line, the TV stats, you know, batting average, on base, slug, all very good. And can't really ask for any more. As important as anything is he is enjoying the game. And, you know, he seems to be playing fun. Having fun. I know he's playing hard. You know, the one thing we do need to see is we need to see more contact.
All right, so they want to see more contact. He adds that they're still seeing a high strikeout rate.
Yeah, and those are the things that they have to keep monitoring. It can't be, all right, Jared Kelnick is, you know, gosh, look at the monster home runs that he has, or look at, you know, this and that. That is, you know, as Jerry DePoto said, very easy to the eye to gravitate towards and to see. There's some deeper things that they want to see Jared Kelnick improve on. And those are the things that are going to translate to the big league level. And for him to really truly have success, he's got to fix his strikeout rate. He's got to fix his, you know, his whiff rate or his swing and misses. Those have to, you know, be limited, because if he can do that, and if he's committed to doing that, and all signs are yes, that he can he has so much talent. He can be such an incredible player at this league. It's just whether or not he can make those adjustments. That's what this is going to be hinged upon.
All right, it's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. There is something happening this year for the Seahawks that's happened in years prior, and I remember being very stressed about it years prior. This year, not so much. I'll tell you why.